sat before Congress early this afternoon.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after, Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleagues delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seems useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Rhode Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The fact of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God. Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
You have just heard a transcription of President Roosevelt's address before Congress this afternoon. Congress later decided, with but one dissenting vote, to declare war on Japan.
This is the National Broadcasting Company. Take you now to Washington.
The National Broadcasting Company presents the National Radio Forum, arranged by the Washington Evening Star. The forum features each week an outstanding figure in the affairs of our government, speaking on a subject of countrywide interest. Tonight's distinguished speaker will be introduced by Howard P. Bailey of the editorial staff of the Washington Star.
Good evening. Tonight, the National Radio Forum had intended to present to you Senator Meade of New York and Representative Ramspeck of Georgia, who were to have spoken on matters affecting federal employees. That was the plan yesterday morning, before it was known that the Japanese government, which was blandly discussing peace in Washington and Tokyo, was all the while planning an inexcusably treacherous attack on our island possessions. Tonight, a mighty nation is collectively rolling up its sleeves to avenge the American lives which have been lost. Senator Meade and Representative Ramspeck have graciously given up their time in order that we may bring you not the majority leader of the Senate, but the leader of all the Senate now, Senator Alvin W. Barkley of Kentucky. Senator Barkley, speaking to you extemporaneously, will tell you what this nation proposes to do about the horribly ill-advised challenge which the Japanese have issued to this mighty nation. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Barkley.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been asked by the National Radio Forum to comment for a brief period this evening upon the events which have culminated in the declaration by Congress that a state of war has existed and now exists between Japan and the United States. The events which have led up to this tragic culmination are familiar, more or less, to all of the people of the United States and of the world. It may not be inappropriate to remind ourselves that nearly a century ago, the United States introduced Japan to civilization. It was a great American admiral who lifted the veil from Japan and was instrumental then and later through the government of the United States and the people of our country in bringing Japan from a state of hermitage out into the open, where she proceeded to enjoy the associations and the advantages of a civilized world. We have looked at long distance, of course, but being narrowed by the inventions of man, and consistently narrowed by the inventions of man, we have looked upon the progress of Japan with some interest, and it has been customary for us to boast of the fact that we were, in the beginning, responsible for the initiation of the Japanese government as a great world power. During recent years, the course which Japan has pursued in regard to international affairs has been one which has somewhat created a doubt in the minds of the American people and of the world at large as to whether she appreciated the part we had played in lifting the veil from her original status. I need not go back into the history of the last century. Only in recent years, however, we have seen what appeared to be a change in the policy and the outlook and the methods which have been actuated by a desire to conquer and by the aggressive spirit which has been encouraged, more or less, in the last few years at least, by one or two other national powers. Beginning with 1931, Japan started upon her more recent course of aggression. Upon a pretext, which I need not go into and which I have not the time to detail, she went into ancient Manchuria, which is now under the name of Manchukuo, a puppet state in China, controlled and dominated by Japan. The government of the United States disapproved of that action on the part of Japan because it was an act of aggression, and it was an act of aggression against a great nation which had from time immemorial but no action been a friend of the United States. But no action was taken because the United States did not receive the necessary cooperation among other nations to make our protest effective. Then in 1937, Japan increased her aggressions and expansions into the territory of China, and from that time until now has been engaged in a war of conquest and of domination over China, whose only purpose, so far as we know and believe, was to maintain her territorial integrity, which had been guaranteed by nearly all of the nations of the world, and to live in peace with the nations of the world and to develop her own internal economy. Of course, we cannot disassociate the Japanese policy from that of other nations which have in recent years been bent upon aggression. It may be true, as is believed by many people in this country and throughout the world, that Japan's actions in recent months and years have been actuated by the policy of aggression and world domination which has been proclaimed by Hitler and Mussolini, by the Nazis and the fascists as their ultimate goal. Whether it be true that Japan has been prodded by Hitler and by all that he represents in her course in China, in Indochina, and in the Malay Peninsula, and in the South Pacific, is now a matter of no great concern, except as a historical background to the acts which have culminated in today's action on the part of the Congress of the United States. We have never desired aggression in the Pacific. What territory we have possessed there or now possess has been obtained for the most part through peaceful negotiations and by friendly and mutual annexation. The Philippine Islands, of course, came to us as a result of the Spanish-American War back in 1898. And we have time and again declared our purpose to free the Philippine Islands and to give them their independence, and the law is in effect now, which does that at the end of a very brief period in the future. So that what we have done in the Pacific Ocean, what territory and islands we have been able to gather under the aegis of the American flag and the American Constitution, have not been acquired by any desire for aggression to take away from any nation its territory or its rights. But we have an inherent interest in the Pacific Ocean and in its commerce and in its territories and in its government. If I had the time, I might give you a long list of materials which are utterly essential and indispensable to the defense of the United States. These materials must be brought here across the Pacific Ocean. They are obtained, some of them in China, some of them in Indochina, some of them in the Malay Peninsula. And therefore, Singapore, which has a sort of romantic connotation in our contemplation of Pacific problems, is important to us because... If the port of Singapore and the regions around it should be closed to American trade, it would very vitally affect many of our industries which are now engaged in producing articles of defense for the United States. We have been seeking as a nation over many months and years to bring about a peaceful settlement of the problems of the Pacific. There have been many conferences held, some of them in the islands of the Pacific, seeking to arrive at an accommodation of interest and policy among all the nations involved in the Pacific, including China and Japan and Russia and France and Holland and England and all the other nations and their possessions in that great ocean. There was some hope that these negotiations might culminate in success, and at the request and the suggestion of the Japanese government, several months ago, negotiations were entered into, or conversations, rather, were entered into, for until very recently they never attained the dignity of actual negotiation. But conversations were engaged in between the Secretary of State and the President, and between the Japanese ambassador to the United States, and more recently through the agency of a special ambassador from Japan, in an effort to bring about a peaceful settlement of the disagreements which had arisen between the two countries and in the Pacific region generally. And it seems to me being almost incredible, and would be incredible if it had not occurred, that while these very conversations are in progress, while the Japanese ambassador and his colleague are delivering to the Secretary of State a reply of our government to from Japan to our government in response to a representation of our government in the process of these negotiations, Japan attacks the territory of the United States, murders our citizens, sinks some of our ships, and makes war upon the United States of America without the formality of a declaration. I dare say that in all civilized history, if this can be called civilized history, no such evidence of treachery and duplicity has ever been engaged in by any nation that called itself civilized. Of course, in view of what happened on yesterday, there was no course that the American government could pursue. There was no course that the President of the United States could pursue. That there was no course that the American people could pursue except to accept this challenge at once and without equivocation, and set about to not simply punish Japan, but to make it impossible for such an occurrence again to be brought about between nations supposed to be friendly. Therefore, as a result of these events, the President today, in a message to Congress, brief and to the point, which you have just heard by transcription over this station, ask Congress to accept the existence of war as a fact and that our government proceed accordingly. Within an incredibly brief time, both houses of Congress, with only one dissenting vote, declared that a state of war exists between Japan and the United States. There are 95 senators in the United States Senate. Ordinarily, there are 96, but due to the death of Senator Adams of Colorado, there are now only 95. Many of these senators were taken by surprise at the events of yesterday and were in their homes in many parts of the United States. some of them were unable to reach Washington in time to vote on the resolution which was adopted today. But there were 82 out of the 95 senators in their seats today, and 82 senators voted for the declaration of war recommended by the president. In the House of Representatives, the vote was 388-1. So that I think I may say that never before in the history of the United States did Congress act so promptly and so definitely and with such unanimity as it acted today in accepting the challenge hurled at us by this treacherous government of Japan, which may or may not represent the real people of Japan. So that we are at war with Japan. Now there are many people in this country who have felt and expressed the feeling that all we need to do in regard to Japan is to wipe her out in a few weeks or a few months. I sincerely trust that the war with Japan may be brief, that its termination may be successful, and I have no doubt that that will be its termination. But it would be a mistake for the American people not to assume that this war with Japan may be a long war. Nobody can tell precisely how long it will last. No one can predict how long it will take the American Navy and the American forces and the American people to win this war which Japan has forced upon the United States. It is many thousand miles from San Francisco and Seattle to Japan. Naturally, Japan has more naval and military bases in the Orient than the United States can possibly have. Therefore, our ships, our supplies, our equipment, whatever it may be, must be sent thousands of miles across the Pacific Ocean to cope with the Japanese forces wherever they may be found. If it so happens that the Japanese forces are brought across the Pacific to this side, naturally, the advantage will be ours in a conflict with Japan. But whatever sacrifice is required, whatever effort in the production of equipment and in that use of that equipment to win this war, the American government, the American Congress, and the American people have unsheathed their sword in self-defense, in defense of our territory, in defense of our people, in defense of our institution. And we feel that not only is this war being made upon us by Japan, but we feel that it is being made upon us by those who control Japan, those who have dictated to Japan, those who have prodded Japan to engage in this unspeakable treachery and duplicity which has brought this tragedy upon the two nations. So we're not only fighting Japan, we're not only fighting the military clique in Japan, but we're fighting, and we'll be compelled to fight, all the resources that Japan and that Hitler and that Mussolini and that those who work with them under the tri-party treaty between the Axis and Japan to defend ourselves against the combined forces of these nations to prevent their conquering Europe and Africa and Asia and thereby encircling the United States and encircling the Western Hemisphere and endanger all that we have lived and fought for 150 years and all that we represent not only in the United States but in the Western Hemisphere. It involves the Monroe Doctrine, which has been an American doctrine for 125 years. It involves our self-defense. It involves the integrity of our nation. It involves the honor of our people. It involves the question of freedom and democracy here and in the world, and I believe I speak the truth when I say that there has never been a time in any conflict in the history of the United States, as demonstrated today in the two houses of Congress, when there was such unanimity of opinion and such unity of purpose and determination as we have with us now in this conflict between us and Japan, which has been forced upon us so suddenly and so unexpectedly. Now, we have been, of course, engaged in discussions during the last 2 or 3 years concerning the foreign policy of the administration. There have been Americans, sincere and honest and patriotic, who have disagreed with the foreign policy of this administration with respect to some phases of our dealings with nations across the ocean. But regardless of whatever honest differences there may have been heretofore among American citizens, with reference to the policy of the administration in dealing with foreign affairs, I think I can say, and the record will prove it, that today, tonight, and until this thing has been fought out, the American people are united. They are of one mind, of one heart, and of one purpose. And that purpose is to preserve democracy in America, to preserve our institutions, to preserve the Western Hemisphere from domination or encirclement from any source, regardless of its origin, and to make it impossible in the future for any nation even to seek to dominate mankind as the effort is being made today. We used to think that we were safe in America because two oceans surrounded us. But we have discovered in recent years that wide oceans, deep oceans, and high mountains cannot any longer insulate us against the electric currents that are flashing in the skies around the world. Much as we hate war, much as we despise it, much as we have sought to avoid it, not only ourselves, but among the other nations of the world, we are not afraid to accept it now any more than we were afraid to accept it in 1776, in 1812, in 1848, in 1861 to 65, in 1898, and in 1917, we were not afraid, though we knew that to fight and to engage in war involved sacrifices that we would otherwise avoid. Let us hope that out of all the confusion and all the brutality and all the bloodshed and all the chaos that is now encircling the world, there may come a stronger determination among the people everywhere to preserve the gains in behalf of freedom and democracy which have been made in all the years of the past, so that we may hand this nation and all nations down to future generations freer and prouder and stronger. I thank you.
You have heard an address by the Honorable Alvin W. Barkley of Kentucky, the Senate Majority Leader, who discussed the American challenge. Never has America lost a war. A united people and the greatest nation on earth are answering the attack with the guns and bombs, torpedoes and bullets that will send the Japanese Empire to its doom. All Americans have been shocked by this ruthless attack. All Americans are determined to avenge it. It's going to cost billions and billions of dollars to guarantee victory for our democracy. Buy United States defense bonds and stamps, as many as you can. The National Radio Forum, arranged for the Washington Evening Star, originated in the studios of WMAL in Washington and has been presented as a public service by NBC and the independent radio stations associated with the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.